Welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show, bringing the tales and stories of the ancient Celts to your fireside.
Episode 44, The Eagle Strikes.
Hello, welcome to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. I'm Gary.
And I'm Ruth. This is the second story in the saga of Branwen, the daughter of Llyr, which is the second branch of the Welsh Mabinogion.
So this episode is the second part of the story that links the first and second branches together.
Oh yes, I can't wait. Also, we'd love to hear from you. If you have any suggestions or you'd just like to write to us about the show, please do email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com.
You can also use the SpeakPipe widget on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com to record some voice feedback for us to play in one of our shows.
The show notes for this episode can be found at CelticMythPodShow.com/Eagle Strikes.
Let's have some news and views.
Now, as you know, we're now playing promos at the end of our episodes, and so...
if you have a podcast that specialises in myths, legends or folklore...
or anything pagan-based, Celtic, Druidic, anything like that, do let us know.
So send us your promo and we'll play it for you in one of our shows.
Hmm.
We've also launched a brand new podcast called In Bed with a Druid.
Yes, we'll bring you a mixture of interviews for every occasion, covering topics such as the arts, spirituality, relationships, and lots of humour.
Yeah, there'll be some funny interviews, some serious, some saucy, but all will be interesting and entertaining.
Yes, it should be fun. Let's listen to a promo. Join me, Ruthie, in bed with a druid, where I speak with fascinating people about their bedtime secrets, lives, hobbies, passions, and beliefs. So take off your shoes, hop into bed, and relax in bed with a druid. Find us at inbedwithadruid.com or on your favourite podcatcher. This is a Celtic Myth Show production. And the launch of the first episode will be on Valentine's Day 2020. Enjoy. So, let's have a listen to the reminder from our last show.
He watched the pale Rhiannon and thought of all the trials that she had suffered and of how frail she looked in this moment. Was she strong enough to bear this news?
The boy has been under our care and my tuition in this court for years, and yet now I must take him far away.
He's talking about the bonds of fosterage, my husband, about sending our son away to the court of Bran, the High King, to be fostered as his son.
I'm to go away, but Mother...
Hush, boy.
What is the High King like, Pendaran? How much land does he rule? Tell me about his brothers and his sister. Why does Mother say their sister cherishes all things? How long will I stay in Gwynedd?
Slow down. Slow down, lad. Your questions are running faster than my lips can utter the answers you seek. I shall end up falling over my own tongue.
For weeks now, the sounds of sawing, chopping and building had resounded around Llyr's dun. The ramparts above the ditch surrounding the great hall echoed to the noises of furious industry and the chatter of many happy people. Both large and small roundhouses were springing up all across the white field outside the dun, as each noble family and retinue settled into their own accommodations. Finarfin and her ladies had been housed in a specially built group of luxuriously decorated houses. Even her companion, the proud young queen of the Briganti from the north of Albion, had been impressed with the sumptuous decorations, the quality of the food, and the richness of the wine offered to them all. The main banqueting hall was a large rectangular building, and each evening, Hlir and Penarvin welcomed all of the newly arrived guests with gifts of gold, silver, beads, horses and cattle, and they received many gifts in return. The nobles would stand aghast at the luxury of the richly coloured decorations before they were led to a place at the table to dine. Hlir threw his arm around his future wife's shoulders and pulled her gently towards himself. Penarvin smiled up at him and leant her head onto his chest.
Not long now, my love, and we can be together for all of our days.
Have the Red Crow and his chief druid arrived yet, my lord?
Hlir smoothed her long black hair away from her face as his gaze fell like fast-falling rain across the faces of the people filling the main space in front of the high table. He could see poets telling the old stories and sagas for some tables, bards and musicians performing for others, and wrestling matches and other contests of skill noisily dominating the centre of the space. Sadly, there was as yet no sign of the chief druid.
He communes with the spirit still, my love. The time of our marriage comes fast upon the rising of the Beltane sun, so I pray to the gods that no hitch is being planned by those cunning druids.
All will be well, my love, for the gods are smiling upon us at this moment.
Yet where is the High King? Should he not be here by now?
He will be, my lord. He will.
Penarvin looked up into the sea-green eyes of her beloved and nestled her head into the already greying mass of his beard. Her own warm brown eyes sparkled with an intensity that shamed and dulled the bright gemstones in the jewellery that she wore. The evening passed in merriment, with the most succulent meats at the feast and the richest of meads and wines imported from faraway exotic lands. Many voices rose loud in song, and true to form as the shadows lengthened, gathering in the corners with hints of true darkness, and the fires and torches making the tall wooden walls flicker red with dancing flame sprites, the High King, along with his retinue, including the old chief druid, made his way into the feasting hall and came to greet Hlir and his bride-to-be before heavily taking a seat at his side.
Tomorrow is a special day for us then, my old friend.
My lady and I await your blessing with eagerness.
You shall have it, Hlir of the White Hill. You will be my new son when fasted to my daughter. And I have a special gifting for you once the ceremony is complete.
How so, my lord?
Let me keep my little surprise, my young friend. There are few enough joys awaiting for me on Erin's green fields any longer except the wedding of my daughter and my gift to you.
It shall be so, lord.
Long before dawn spread wan fingers into the hall, Penarvin watched Bran take his sleepy young son upstairs to find some sleeping pallets. Bran climbed the rough cut steps, unaware of his mother's tender gaze, his own heart full of love for his son, Caradog. He settled the boy and crossed to his sister's cot, nodding to her ladies and took one last glance at his baby sister. Fionnuala, who most now called Bramwen, sleepily looked up at him and smiled. Her own hair as raven black as his own and their mother's, but her eyes a radiant sapphire blue that once was common in those that came from under the hill. He stroked her forehead, and she instantly passed once more into the deep slumber of the innocent. To see his parents so happy in the joy and love that they shared brought a great smile and warmth to Bran's heart, and he dearly wished that his elder brother could have joined them for the celebration. Manawydan was away, though, as he so often was, exploring little known ways and sojourning with the Fae. None knew how long he would be gone, as a day spent with the Fae would often turn into weeks before Manawydan was seen striding up the White Hill again. With a sigh, Bran turned back to his own pallet, threw his richly embroidered cloak over the snoring Caradog, and stretched out beside the boy. Many were the nobles and warriors who stood blear-eyed with throbbing heads to greet the sun for this Beltane celebration. Yet all were excited to not only take part in the festivities, but to be here on the White Hill to see their beloved king be united with his beautiful princess from the Island of the Mighty. To see both islands become joined and at peace. To see the final fruition of the arrangement began long ago by Balan Ap Kelly, Llyr's father and the Red Crow, who had been High King of the Emerald Isle for most of Llyr's youth. The chief druid, joined by many of his order who had travelled far to be here this day, started to chant to welcome the sun at this sacred time. Penarthyn's mind wandered as the speeches began, the excitement rising in her breast as she stood next to her man, resplendent in his finest weaves and brightest gold. Perhaps only the excitement of Llyr and Penarthyn outshone the eagerness of all the others, except perhaps for the irrepressible Branwen, their youngest child, as she ran from table to table and grabbed what bread, cheese and milk she could for her breakfast, while all the grown-ups were standing silently to watch and listen to all those old druids. As soon as she had finished eating, she ran off to play with the other children, some of whom spoke with accents strange to her ears. Penarthyn watched her go, with a gentle smile on her lips. Even at her young and tender age, there would not be a group of children who would not want to play with her. She seemed to make every game special, every joke the best ever heard, and each of her friends felt like they were her dearest companion. She also proudly watched the mighty Bran beat his spear against his shield at the climax of the ceremony, cheering until his throat was hoarse with the rest, and then set off to break his own fast. As the hands of the couple were bound with cords and their eyes shone more brightly than the golden cups raised in celebration, the High King, Bov Dyrg, the old blood crow, came to stand before the couple and held his hands in the air to call for silence. The chief druid seemed to watch the old king's face intently, and at a nod, turned away to join the others of his order as they waited. Bov smiled at Llyr and Penarthyn and laid a hand on their shoulders. His smile was warm, and yet his eyes held both sorrow and joy as he gazed at his foster daughter and then at the young king, Llyr.
"Now, I give my gift to you, my beloved children, and I ask that you weep not at its giving."
"But my lord, my father..."
Bov turned to the crowd assembled around them all and raised his voice so that they could all hear.
"I have been your chosen king for many a year, dear friends, and I am overjoyed to be here at the wedding of Munster's finest king and my beautiful daughter. Glad am I to give them both the blessing of the High King. It is now time for me to make the journey and rejoin our ancestors to take my place as the king of the mother's children, and I would choose my son, Llyr, to lead and to guide you here on Erin's soil."
"But father..."
"Is this an honour that you would not accept, my son?"
"Of course I would accept it, father. But surely it is not your time to leave us. And I have not been chosen by the people at this time. The honour has not been offered me."
"Then let us see who they would choose."
Bov took 3 paces towards the crowd and spoke loudly.
"Kings and nobles all, who among you all would choose Llyr to be High King after me? And who would not? Then so shall it be. Let our law speakers and our druids make it so before the eyes of the gods."
The druids, the law speakers and the bards all came forward then, and Llyr was invested as High King of the Emerald Isle. Bov sat watching events with a warm smile on his lips, but even though a huge weight seemed to have lifted from his shoulders, a sadness swam through his eyes like the salmon in Connla's pool. All felt this change as if it were a two-edged sword, for Bov had been a good and wise king, and they would be sad to see him leave Erin's shores, and yet there were many who loved Llyr well, for he was a mighty warrior and the hearts of those who fought at his side always sang with joy. Many were the stories of his justice from the White Hill, and the people loved him well. All, that is, except for one of the noble ladies, who moved quietly towards the back of the assembly, sending her guard away from her as she pushed through the crowd. Her eyes scanned for one of the warriors who had crossed the narrow sea with her. a mature man, well trained in the arts of war, a man who was far more widely travelled than many of her court. She found him and beckoned him to her, moving away from the crowds to where she would not be overheard.
Do you understand what has happened here, Lucius?
Aye, my lady. A new High King has been chosen.
Far more than that, you Roman idiot. Have you not watched our kings carefully for your master in his iron camp back on Albion soil?
I have, my lady.
Then listen well, Lucius. The new High King of Erin has just been married to Penarthyn of the Royal House of Wales, an alliance that could threaten the peace and prosperity we enjoy. It could prove very troublesome to Astorius. Do you understand the full import now?
I do, my lady of Regwith. I shall leave and inform the general immediately.
They went their own ways then, and the noble queen went once more to stand at Penarthyn's side, with a warm smile on her face and words of joy and congratulations on her lips. For 3 days the celebrations continued on the White Hill. For 3 days did Hlir and Penarthyn know the deep joy of each other. For 3 days the poets sang new songs of joy and celebration. 3 days until Hlir and his family prepared to leave for the Island of the Mighty to continue the celebrations at the court of Beli Mawr. Just over 3 days until Hlir's ships crossed the narrow sea, crunching up onto the shingle, and they prepared to make camp. Just over 3 days until Hlir and his new wife, the most fair Penarthyn, his son, the mighty Bran, and his grandson, the much-loved Caradog, were captured by the Roman ambush surging out from the trees around them. Penarthyn could hear his footsteps approaching long before he came into the room. The guards rattled to attention as the cunning Roman strode in, his golden neck chains, brooches and rings clinking as he sat himself down on a couch opposite the Welsh beauty. He watched her as a man might admire one of his prize hounds. Penarthyn shrunk inside and wrapped her silver-trimmed cloak tightly around herself, despite the heat that made her feel constantly weak and tired. Oh, how much she needed Hlir's strong arms around her instead of her cloak. She badly needed the peace of his sea-blue eyes to calm her shattered nerves and shield her from the heat of this dark-eyed Roman's gaze. He shifted his robe over his arm, the sunlight glinting off the rings on each of his battle-scarred fingers, and pinned her back into the couch with an unflinching stare. Penarthyn deliberately sat up straighter, reminding herself that she was the queen of two islands, princess of the House of Dawn, and the Great Belly's living inheritance. She would make Astorius pay for his insolence in capturing the High King and his family.
I take it you are finding the accommodations satisfactory, my lady.
My home lies in the green and lush valleys and fields of the Twin Islands, my lord. My walls are the high mountains of Wales, and my ceiling is the vaulted dome of the deep blue sky. In what way could you ever consider this building in your smelly city satisfactory?
Do you find yourself in chains, my lady? Or perhaps you would prefer to find yourself in a Roman dungeon? Maybe entertaining my soldiers with a song?
What is it that you want, Astorius? You've captured the royal house of Lear, paraded us through the streets of Rome in those very chains you mentioned, and have now separated me from my husband.
I want a seat at your royal table, my lady. I want the right of heritage in your lands. I don't think that's too much to ask as a gift from my emperor. Do you?
I would die first. We're a proud people.
You don't think we Romans have our pride?
Your pride, General, is in the taking of people and gold from other lands. Pride in conquering lands and people. That is not pride, sir. That is lust.
Ah, yes. Now we come to it. Lust. You are indeed the fairest from Albion's shores, milady.
I would die first.
Yes, yes, die first, proud people, I get it. But would you let your husband die first while you live, or your son, or your grandson, Caradog?
So I ask you again, Roman, what do you want?
I would lie with you and get you with child, milady.
But I'm married.
To a dead man?
Lear is dead?
Not yet, my dear lady, not yet. And if you provide me with a son to rule in Wales, I promise you his life and his freedom. If not, then I'm afraid that you and your family will never return.
Never, you glittering jeweled popinjay. I would die first.
I know, I know. I will leave you to think about it, my fair queen.
Astorius left the compound, and Penarthyn was alone with her thoughts and her fears. She was not allowed to see her family all that year. They remained locked in their golden cage, occasionally brought out to feasts and celebrations to show off the conquering power of the cunning Roman general. At those times, Penarthyn was seated next to Astorius, and Clea, Bran and Caradawg were bound in chains as prisoners of the Empire. The fame of Astorius rose, and the shame of Clea's family rose. Their light began to dim in the midst of the excesses and degradations of the Roman elite and nobility. After 3 times 9 months, Penarthyn was broken. She longed for the mists in the valleys of her home, for the bright skies above her mountains, and most of all she longed to be with her family again. Her spirit died, and she gave in to the lusts of the bejeweled Roman general. He bedded her repeatedly, and then went to visit Clea to tell him of his conquests.
I have some news for you, King Clea. News of your family.
Clea lifted his eyes to the bright golden breastplate of the Roman general. His heart lifted in hope, but when he saw the smile in the eyes of his enemy, he knew that all was lost. He could only hope that the Island of the Mighty was safe in the hands of his eldest son, Manawydan. Although the boy was fey-touched, he was still of the line of Manannorn, and that had to count for something, didn't it?
You see, your wife has been more than accommodating to me.
By the gods! What are you talking about?
Your wife has come to my bed on more than one occasion. She has come willingly and of her own free will, I might add.
That is nothing to me, you golden buffoon. It is her body and she can do with it what she will. Although, I do question her taste.
Be that as it may, my dearest prisoner, she has agreed to bear me a child.
She would never do that. She would die first.
I know, she would die first, yes. But in this case, she has chosen you and the lives of her family above her own honour. When my child is born of your wife, she will be of your family. Now I know how highly you prize the gift of a child to a family, so I am bestowing you with the highest gift I can think of, and then I will set you free.
Then your son or daughter would be a part of the Welsh royal court.
Exactly so.
You are my golden enemy in truth. History will always remember the treachery you have done my house, Iaros, with.
In time, the pain of the betrayal lessened, and depression set in upon Clea, and despair upon his wife Penarthyn. He became silent and withdrawn. After 3 years, she became pregnant, and the great mother blessed her with twins. The Roman physicians declared that the twins she carried were boys, and when it was her time, the first was born peacefully. But the second baby was positioned badly for birth, and Penarthyn could not deliver him. The Romans declared that the child would die if something were not done, and Eoroswith, not wishing to lose a child with ties to the House of Dorne, ordered the child to be born, no matter the cost. So Eoroswith became father of twin boys, Romans with royal Welsh blood. They stitched Penarthyn up as best as they could, but her delicate and fine body could not stand the shock and strain of the operation. Penarthyn, thrice fair, blessed of two islands, passed from this life shortly afterwards. The twins were named Nisien and Evnisien, for the two boys were like chalk and cheese, so different were they in their outlook. As the dark-skinned twins grew into their teens, Nisien was always at peace wherever he was, and he brought peace to those he was with, but Evnisien loved the life of luxury that his father provided for him. Clea and his family were given the freedom of the House of Eoroswith. Bran studied much under the great minds of the philosophers and senators, but his father sank into a deep depression from which he never really awoke.
So what happened next, Father?
After Eoroswith had achieved his goal, he had no further use for the men of Clea's family, and he freed them as he had promised. They had been in captivity for 7 years. With the death of the great Welsh queen, the alliance between the two islands had been broken. Clea travelled to the Emerald Isle
but his family had been long gone, and the High Kingship had passed to another. The White Hill in Erin was gone, and the silver waters of the Great Loch were sullied with the stains of the blood of many men who had lost their lives fighting for it. So Hrir returned to Wales in search of his remaining kin, and he took his boys to dwell with them.
But where was this? Why have we not heard of it?
Many cycles have passed since that time, boy. And now only the wise remember the details of Hrir's story.
Knowing the laws of Celtic hospitality and kinship, Eroswith escorted the two young boys to Gwynedd and had them delivered to Hrir as foster children under the shield of truce. Hrir felt bound to take them in as his own sons, as they were the children of Penarthyn, his kin, his beloved wife, and he grew to love them as such. Eroswith was far away, and happy indeed, for now there was Roman blood in the highest court in Wales. But all of the children of Hrir loved Evnissyen as their brother, and Nissyen especially so. The children of Hrir grew to be tall, strong, beautiful and highly skilled warriors, adept with the spear, the sling and on horseback. Bran had learned much from the cosmopolitan and accepting ways of Rome, and became a wise ruler who declared that his court would be open to all those of different cultures and faiths. And it was he that first allowed the Christian monks and priests to enter the land freely. Hence he will always be known in history as Bran the Blessed, Bendigeidvran, for bringing the White Christ onto the Island of the Mighty and establishing laws of tolerance and a new type of rule for the kingdom. Evnissyen always bore the weight of his mother's death on his shoulders, and this constant reminder in a cold land of savages, a wet land of pig lovers, a land of wooden huts rather than warm villas where his every need was not met, was more than he could stand. In his mind, he deserved far better. He deserved to be covered in gold as his father had been.
So, why did Eroswith release Hrir and his family? I don't understand. Why didn't he just kill them all?
Well, he knew that with the death of his daughter at dawn, the alliance between Erin and the Island of the Mighty had been broken. Eroswith also knew that all of Hrir's kin on the Emerald Isle were gone. He had nothing left. Although he knew well that the tribes would unite against a common enemy without their High King, they would be weak. He could attack each kingdom at his leisure. That is why your father in Dyved made the deals that he did with the Eagle.
So why did he not attack all of Prydain and put us all in chains?
Because, young Pryderi, he was always a wily old fox. He watched and he waited to see what would happen with the kings of Wales. He had a secret plan, just in case Hrir would once again find his way into a position of power.
But why? Surely Hrir had been beaten and broken.
Not at all, lad. He may have carried the death of his wife as a black cloak about his shoulders, but he was not beaten.
But, what was the Golden Enemy's secret plan? What do you mean by that, father?
I mean that his plan lay in his hope and his joy. The dark-skinned twins, Nissyen and Evnissyen, who had grown up with him in Rome.
I don't understand.
When Hrir arrived back on our shores, all those years ago, he fought for and gained a small kingdom. Eventually, he married Gilvan of the Line of Dawn, and within a few years, being much loved by the people, he had been chosen as High King of the Island of the Mighty. They named him Hrir Hlediaeth, Hrir Half-Speech. We all remember the way Penarthyn had teased him over his broken Welsh and loved him for it. But my thoughts wander. This was what the Golden One was afraid of, and the twins were his secret plan.
Eroswith knew well the old laws of hospitality, and when his twins came of age, he brought them to Gwynedd under a shield of truce and delivered them unto Hlir to be his foster sons. Hlir was honour-bound to take him into his family, as they were the children of Penarddun, of the House of Dawn, and like you, they had the ancient blood of the Shining Ones in their veins. In the few short years that were left to him on this land, he loved them very well as the sons of his beloved wife. When his time came to go unto the mother's breast, he laid himself down in a coracle and sailed away to the west, passing from us and into other realms. Great sorrow was on the land, and the people chose the mighty Bran as High King to follow him. And you know the rest of the story.
Well, I still think there is much to know, Father.
That may be true, lad, but now I think it is time you wrapped yourself in your furs and got some sleep. For tomorrow we go to the court of Bran to meet your new family.
Pendaran watched the young boy roll himself up in his bedding, and soon heard the boy's breathing slow and quieten. As he watched young Pryderi sleep, the old druid's mind began to wander back to days that were so long ago, and yet still so bright in his mind. 7 years Bran and his family had been held in the City of the Eagle, and long had they suffered under the fist of the Golden Enemy. Pendaran still remembered the joy in all of their faces when they were reunited with their sister Branwen, who was now almost fully grown, and shone with all the beauty and nobility of their mother. He still remembered how old Hlir wept openly as Branwen clung to him, his mind fading from the embrace of his daughter to the memory of his wife, and then back again to the deep blue eyes of his daughter. But how much more did he remember the surprise he felt when his druid sight fell upon Bran for the first time since his return? The boy had grown into a man, of course, and yet there was so much more. He still had the ferocity, strength and kindness of the warrior that Pendaran remembered from his visits to the court of Beli Mawr at those times when Bran was visiting. But now, his thoughts were deep, complex and ordered into layers of interconnected patterns. Strong principles ran like the lines that connected the letters of Oum together on memory stones scattered across the land. He had learned much from his time in captivity of Roman civilization, of government, and its culture and wisdom had been nurtured deep within his vast mind. Even then, Pendaran knew that when the time came, he would be chosen as High King, and Innis Akedrin, the Island of the Mighty, would be mighty once more. Manoeden, the firstborn, spent much time with the druids learning of the ways of the Otherworld, and he too would one day be wise in the ways of the Shining Ones. All of the children, except the young Branwen, who loved too strongly and too deeply to cause hurt to any living being, grew to be tall, strong, beautiful and highly skilled warriors, adept with the spear, the sling and on horseback. And when the twins were brought by Hlir into the royal family, they were loved by all. Nissim was especially loved, as he carried a peace deep within his heart that he shared with all that he spoke to. People learned to be very careful indeed around his twin brother, Evnission. Pendaran could never truly understand why the boy delighted in causing mischief and trouble amongst his kin and any that were around him. In the morning he would warn young Pryderi about this uncle and try to watch over him closely. As he wondered just how he could tell the boy these truths, the old man sank into a state of deep and dreamless sleep. What he didn't know was that as the twins grew into their teens, and the light inside Nissian shone just as brightly as that of the other children of Hlir, so did the light of Evnissian become dimmed and eventually dark as the weight of his mother's death fell heavily onto his shoulders. He loved his father in Rome dearly, as Eoroswith had given the young Evnissian a life of luxury, and the young boy had grown strong in pride and arrogance. But he hated him also for casting him out and sending him to live in this cold, wet, miserable land of savages and pig lovers, a land of wooden huts and palisades rather than warm villas where his every need was met. It was more than he could stand. In his mind, He deserved much better. He deserved to be covered in gold, chains, necklaces, rings and brooches, just as his father had been, and not just carrying Roman blood into the court of Wales. Although all of Clea's children loved him as kin, it was only Branwen who opened her heart to him and loved him truly for what he was, for whatever he was. And Evnissian could never understand his own feelings towards this muddy barbarian princess with the raven hair and bright sapphire eyes. In our next episode, the children of Slir are on the top of the Rock of Harlech when they see a mighty fleet of ships approaching the shores of Wales.
Great stuff. I'm loving this story. Okay, let's have some listener feedback.
Oh, yes, yes. We heard from Julie from Kansas, who left us a lovely voice message on our website.
My name is Julie. I live in the United States, in the state of Kansas. I just recently found your podcast because I was exploring the different mythologies across the world. I listen to your podcast while I'm at work, and it's very fascinating. I think you guys have done a marvelous job. And the one good thing about me being a late bloomer when it comes to listening to your podcast is I get to binge listen to all of your podcasts up to your current one. But I would like to say thank you because you guys make my workday go a lot faster. So thank you.
Thank you for your super message, Julie. It's good to hear we've managed to brighten your day at work a little.
And I hope you enjoy the story of the Branwen episodes that we're now bringing you.
Before we leave you with our final song, let's hear another promo for a great podcast.
Yeah, yeah. Let's listen to Siobhan tell us all about the superb Myth, Legend and Lore podcast.
Welcome to the Myth, Legend and Lore podcast, a place where we can journey Scotland, Ireland, across Scandinavia, Asia and farther still. A place to share mythologies, legends and folklore that have captured our imaginations and fired our curiosity. We all have a story to share. Warriors, gods and goddesses, deities, mysterious beings and messages that have survived the passage of time. Let us keep the art of storytelling alive with the Myth, Legend and Lore podcast. You can find us on Podbean, iTunes, plus many other platforms. And please feel free to get in touch with me, Siobhan Clark, via email mlegendlore@gmail.com. or Twitter at LoreMyth, and Patreon, Myth, Legend, Lore.
Thank you so much for your promo, Siobhan. Her show is a fascinating and informative look at some of our best myths and legends.
Well worth dipping into. So, to finish off our show, let's have a listen to an enchanting track from Kim Thompson.
Yes, it's called Woebetide Hill. Let's have a listen.
In ragged
was Kim Tomsett and her lovely track Woe Betide Hill from her latest album, The Hollows. Evocative, wasn't it?
Very.
You can find out more about Kim on her contributor page on our website.
You can find out where to find her album in the show notes at CelticMythPodShow.com/Eagle Strikes.
Before we go, would you mind if we asked you to leave us a review in Apple Podcasts?
Oh, yes, please. All of your reviews make it much more likely that the podcast will be featured and let more people find our show.
And that really does bring us to the end of the show. So now,
we'd like to wish you many blessings.
Húlvaur.
You have been listening to the Celtic Myth Pod Show. If you enjoyed listening to this show, please come and support us on Patreon at patreon.com/Celtic Myth Show. We hope you'll stay tuned for the next episode. If you'd like to get in touch with us, you can email us at CelticMythShow@gmail.com or come and chat to us on social media. All of the links are on the Contact Us page on our website at CelticMythPodShow.com. We'd also like to send out a big shout of thanks to Coulan's Hounds for our theme music, available at sfhounds.com. This show is a Celtic Myth Joe production.